Welcome to Sin Central Poddy. Isn't that clever? Poddy. P-O-D. It's my podcast, and it's electronic, so we called it the Poddy. Yes. Not the P-O-T-T-Y, the P-A-R-T-Y, the P-O-D-E. Your host, Pat Jansen here. As always, children love me, women want me, men envy me. We'll be taking you to curious places in the motorcycle world, and as always, you'll be fascinated. We're going to indulge your every fantasy today. Actually, we won't, because I know that Jeff Major's listening, and he is my business manager, the producer of this show, and somewhat sexually ambivalent. I don't even want to go where his mind goes in terms of fantasies. Today, I am actually not in Iowa. We are not doing the podcast from Iowa today. Today, we find ourselves in sunny Florida, Gainesville, Florida, at Gainesville Harley-Davidson. Now they like to call them things like Harley-Davidson of Gainesville. But this is actually still Gainesville Harley-Davidson, and I have with me a really special guy that I want to just chat with for 2 or 3 minutes here. He's my older brother. John Jansen's with us. John, say hello to the nice people.
Hello, nice people.
John, what is your role here at Gainesville Harley-Davidson?
Business manager, toilet cleaner, lot porter, whatever needs to be done gets done.
There we go. He's a man of many hats, many hats. You have to be that in the motorcycle industry. And, John, this dealership, I know that you and I have worked at, well, I haven't worked at a lot of Harley dealerships, you have, but, we've worked at a lot of, motorcycle, businesses. This is a cool dealership because, it's family owned. Tell me a little bit about the family that owns this place.
Family that owns this place has owned it for 24 years. Unfortunate helicopter accident, no one, took the dad away, so we still have mom and two sons that run the place every day. Actual owners on site. They're not fishing from the Caribbean. The place is open 6 days a week. I've never been a part of an organization that cared more for the customers and more importantly, on my end, the staff than what this place cares for the people.
Well, and I tell you, when I walk into a place, John, immediately, and you and I know this is as important as anything else, when you walk into a place, the way it's kept up means a lot. You know, they obviously here, they don't walk by scuffs on the wall. They don't walk by trash in the parking lot. Place is neat as a pin and just ready for business, and you can tell that they care because everybody's up and around. If you got time to lean, you got time to clean, and the salespeople are up and walking, and you know it's a Tuesday for Christ's sake, and you know it's not the busiest day of the week for motorcycle sales in terms of having people in, but everybody here is moving and shaking and doing something. So, well, John, thanks for letting me do the podcast from here. Looking forward to drinking a little whiskey with you, and but not chasing any women. Because we don't chase women together anymore. So, but anyway, don't laugh, John. For Christ's sake, the old lady might be listening. So, listen, ladies and gentlemen, a little hook for you. I'm going to have a guy come on with us in a little bit who actually took top secret, what used to be a top secret program from the military, and turned it into one of the most important hubs in the motorcycle industry. So you'll want to stick around for sure to hear that later. My funny producer again, Jeff Major, the sexually ambivalent Jeff Major, so anybody can hit on him. Go ahead and take your turn. Anyway, he's funny. He put on my notes here the Royal Enfield rebuild update. So anyway, but it is kind of a rebuild. The bike rode great. It ran great. It looked great when we finally got it to the smokeout rally for Royal Enfield North America. But there's always – I'm never satisfied with any product. And because we were in a time crunch and we didn't have some of our hardware delivered, I wanted to make sure that the rest of this bike's life and its showing was going to be top-notch. So we actually put it back on the lift. We're disassembling the entire bike, and we're going to massage everything that needs to be massaged and just make sure that, you know, after having done the shakedown run on it and ridden it around a little bit and hauled it across country – once in the back of a truck, once inside my trailer. It's funny to note, it didn't get damaged in the back of the truck as much as it did in the back of the trailer. We actually had a little mishap with the strap, and it caused it to get a bruise. We're going to have to repaint the fuel tank. But that's all good. Darren Williams down at Liquid Illusions is going to take care of that. But anyway, we're having a great time just with that bike still. So, I mean, we're just going to keep playing with it. We're going to change some of the gearing on it. We're going to put a 19-tooth sprocket up front with a 36 in the back, which was stock on that Continental GT 535cc motor. Just to give us a little more top end, that it's 10.5 feet long. It's not going to be a drag bike, but I would like to be able to ride it on the interstate, 75, 80 miles an hour. So we're going to take a look at that. Anybody out there wants to donate about $1,800, I still have the desire to tear the motor down and put a stroker kit in it, from Hitchcock Motorcycles in England. They build a nice stroker kit. But anyway, so the bike's doing great. Again, I think I said this last week. We had Ron Harris on the last podcast. You know, Ron kicked my ass with a dirt bike. I'm not ashamed of that. You know, I didn't want to build a dirt bike. I didn't want to build a cafe racer. I wanted to build a fucking chopper, so that's what I did. It's going to be a chopper. It's timeless, so I'm good with that. So, listen, the first half of this podcast is brought to us from the Custom Culture Artisan Show at the Blue Ridge Run Rally. The Blue Ridge Run Rally, of course, is in September. It is a kind of a replacement, a rejuvenation of the Cherokee Rally that used to happen. So get out there for that. It's going to be a great time. The Cherokee Tribe is putting that on for us again. And the Custom Culture Artisan Show, which is all things biker-related in the motorcycle industry, art, music, bike shows, everything that you can imagine is going to be there. And so you're going to want to get out to the Blue Ridge Run Rally, to the Custom Culture Artisan Show, and we're sure to appreciate them sponsoring the first half of this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, the government came up with a secret plan. Yes, a secret plan, believe it or not, from the government. Who would have thought the government would have had a secret plan? And they called it, I know Al Gore was involved with it, that pretentious, pompous, prick, soft man came up with the Internet. But anyway, I guess he gave it to the military, and the military gave it to us. But anyway, Keith, Bandit Ball, Bandit took that and turned it into really the first and most successful online custom bike magazine in the world. Keith, how are you doing today?
Good, good. I'm still the janitor of the largest
still the janitor.
Custom motorcycle website on my block.
That's good to hear. Hey man, something, you know, this is, you've been generous enough to come back and be with me again. One thing that I'm curious about, how did you get the nomenclature? How did you get Bandit as a name?
Well, I started to work with Lou Kimsey, who was the publisher of Easy Riders magazine, on the third issue. And I was like 23 years old, and as soon as I started to write bike features and things, he said, you can't use your name. We got to come up with a name. Well, over the years, he kept saying that. Nobody could use their name. So I ended up coming up with like five names that I used. But Bandit was the first one, and it's the one that stuck with me for all those years.
All right. So you picked it.
You're right.
You picked it for yourself. All right. So, well, that's good. I didn't know if you'd stolen so much stuff in Mexico. They just started calling you the Bandito. But Bandit. Well, very good.
Yeah.
So that's your go.
It was pretty much the women I ran with called me Bandit.
Well, there you go. Well, that's interesting. Well, it's good to have you back with us. And, man, you have been all consumed there at BikerNet with the Born Free show down there. Is this the Born Free show eighth year?
I think it's like the ninth year.
Oh, I guess so maybe it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Born Free 9.
All right. Well, now, what do you think of that show? I mean, how have you gone every year? What do you think of that show?
You know, it's absolutely fascinating. And it's such a diversion from the smokeout, because I've gone to a lot of smokeouts. And,
right.
I've been to several Born Frees, and, you know, it's just a different culture out here, and it's a different, vibe. Like, I guess the easiest way to explain it is Born Free, the smokeout, to me, is something that's happening. It's vibrant. Born free is more a cool factor.
Right.
Where guys at the smokeout ride out there, they spend the whole weekend there. Born free, which is not very free, they have lots and lots of rules now. The rules keep expanding, you know, and the price keeps going up, so it's not free anymore. You know, they have rules like no colors, no camping, no this, no that, you know, and whereas the smokeout, there are no rules, you know, except don't kill yourself. And don't kill the guy in the tent next to you, you know. And so it's just a different vibe, and there's a lot of really cool bikes, but there's actually, I see something happening from the bike situation. In fact, I sent a guy out to cover it, Paul Garson, great guy, he's been in the industry forever. So he writes this article about how Born Free was all about guys who build bikes in their garage that ride. You know, and blah, 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 you know, that whole nature. And actually, the smokeout sort of started with that same rule. This is about guys, no billet stuff. This is about guys who cobble together bikes in their garage and they ride them, you know.
So
every year you watch the transition of the bikes as they evolve from the garage built, you know, kind of junky rat bike, and then they start getting paint jobs, and they start getting, well, at Born Free, these bikes went from bobbers to then they went to that kind of flat track vintage look that nobody can really ride, you know. I mean, it's not like you ride down the street, you know. And now they've gone to 60s choppers. I mean, 60s choppers, not 70s choppers, because to me, 70s choppers started to get into, you know, we got to go someplace. Where 60s choppers had gas tanks on them that held like a quart of gas. And they had safety bars that went 6 feet in the air and pipes. Well, you know, you're not going to ride that anything, you know, anyplace.
Right.
It's absolutely fascinating to see what's going on in the industries. So now you look at a custom seat on a Born Free bike and it's 2 inches wide. And it runs up a fender over the back tire that's an inch and a half wide. Or maybe, no, 2.5 inches wide. I mean, it's just like tiny, spindly. But I mean, the quality of the craftsmanship's amazing. And there's a lot of really knockout bikes there, but it's just an interesting transition, and the cool factor is amazing. But now here, get this: Saturday, the big show day, it closes at 5:00.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
So it's not much of a party atmosphere.
Exactly, and then I think Sunday. Now they have it open 2 days. It closes probably a little earlier on Sunday. Somebody told me that it's just as the weather started to cool off a little bit, they kicked everybody out.
Yeah, it seems like the Born Free show, and not in a negative way. It's not in judgment. I don't hear that from you, really. It is just a kind of a fascinating subculture of our motorcycle world. But it's in line with a lot of shows that I just call artsy fartsy. It's kind of like they're more like art shows than they are having anything to do with motorcycles in particular. You know, it's more kind of the art of motorcycles.
You're absolutely right. As you started to talk, I started to think, you know, it's more like an art exhibit.
Right.
You know, so
and that's different.
It's still on the head.
Kind of a wine and cheese kind of crowd. I mean, we pick, but. You know, even the dress and, it's a culture, kind of surrounding those things that are particularly, PC, you know, I mean, it's very, very much, you know, stay on your P's and Q's and, you know, we love, it's more kind of a, almost a, it's a hippie hipster culture kind of thing going on with all the big beards and flannel shirts and cuffed jeans and that kind of stuff. It's just kind of it's an intriguing part of our industry for sure.
It is. It's fascinating. It's you know, I went to a guy's shop recently, and he's right here in Long Beach, and his name is Go. And he's Japanese, and so I'll mispronounce his name, but his shop's name is Brat Style, and he has a shop in Japan also. Nicest guy, and this guy, and this is kind of the other side of this coin here, is he's really into, like, flat track racing. You know, he's not a guy that's going to ride around Saturday night on his chopper and impress people. No, he's kind of a flat track racer, and he's an enthusiast. He goes to the flat track races. He's been to that Race of Gentlemen, and he'll have like a 39 Indian flathead that he's racing. Okay, so you walk into his shop, and this is sort of indicative of the Born Free kind of experience. You walk into his shop and you look at a bike, and if you're a guy that doesn't know too much about bikes, you just go, wow. Man, it looks like a bike that, you know, he just found in a barn. It's this racer looking flat track racing bike, you know, and he found it in a barn and nothing's been done to it. He just kind of dusted it off and tuned it up and took it for a ride. Well, but then you start, if you have some knowledge, you know, you've been around the industry, you start looking at it and you go, well, who made that gas tank? Because it's painted to look like a 70-year-old stock paint job. No, the gas tank's got some, you know, you could tell it's been, you know, it's like custom, you know. And he says, oh, yeah, I made that gas tank. And he said, well, who made the oil tank? And you know, and he made the oil tank, and he made all the controls and everything, but he used only old parts, old Harley parts, old Triumph parts, to put this together. So For the naked eye, this looks like a 70-year-old bike that's just been sitting in the dust. But when you look at it close, it's absolutely a new custom motorcycle. And I find this whole twist, it's like you walked into the Twilight Zone, you know?
Yeah, weird. Well, you know, talking about those choppers, you know, I just had to build this bike for Royal Enfield. And, you know, they were looking for something different, and the motor kind of is a throwback motor to the 60s. And so I told them, I said, listen, I'm going to build like a very early 70s chopper. And it kind of was that digger frame, but when the necks were coming down a little bit lower than those huge exaggerated frames, and I'm running a 19-inch tire on the back, you know, but it's not a, you know, like a 21, and I'm running a 21 spool up front, but trying to make it also a little more ergonomic so that it's a little more rideable, no sissy bar. So kind of pulling it, I love what you said about those bikes. I did a lot of research, you know, and just continued to study that period. Because, you know, in the early 70s, they started really moving back to being able to ride the bikes. And, you know, in 1970, 71, that really started to become the trend. But, you know, I took that bike to the smokeout to compete in the build-off, you know, and I got beat by a fucking dirt bike, Bandit. I mean, Ron Harris did a beautiful job, but he built a flat tracker. And people went goo-goo, I guess, over that flat tracker, and my chopper was just there. And I was like, what the fuck do you build a chopper, take it to a chopper event, get beat by a dirt bike? I just don't get it. Our world, our motorcycle.
I could tell you some stories about this event as far as, like, the judging and stuff. You know, it's a little crazy, but you know what I love about it is that choppers, you know, 4 years ago, guys were saying, oh, choppers are dead. Never see a chopper again. Bullshit. Choppers are everywhere now, you know.
Now they're real choppers.
Jeez. I mean, it's just, like you said about the artistic aspect, it's, we have new technology. Guys can do more things. And it's just like open this world. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Listen, man, I get these biker etiquette questions in here all the time as we're doing this. And so Bobby's got a question you can help me answer. I'd be interested to hear. It says, Bobby says, my chick doesn't like motorcycles. Her parents don't either. Neither do mine. Any suggestions?
Yeah, leave town.
No shit. Doesn't sound like you fit in. Doesn't sound like, it sounds like you're perfect. Sounds like you just don't fit in. You just need to get the fuck away from those people. You know, Bobby,
exactly.
The best case scenario, best case scenario from our parents, people like to say, well, you know, I'm 50% my mom, 50% my dad. That's not true. Genetically, we have very little to do with our parents, actually. I mean, those genes, when you start actually cutting it down the way genetics work, you know, they pretty much, you know, we're completely different individuals that just kind of share some similar characteristics with them. So you don't have to worry about being close to your parents or not. You know what I mean? If you got a sibling, let them take care of them. That's what I do with my parents. I let my brother take care of them. But
yeah,
he's not here anymore. He left. He walked out of the room while I'm doing this podcast. But I mean, seriously, if they don't dig the bike thing, if your chick doesn't dig it, if her parents, nobody, who gives a shit about her parents? But if she doesn't dig it, you got to get away from that. That's just going to do nothing but grind you, don't you think, Keith?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, there's only, I don't know what the population of the United States is, what, it's 300 million or something like that. Well, half of them are chicks.
Yeah.
Get the point? You know?
Exactly.
You're going to find a lot of chicks who dig what you're doing.
Exactly. There you go. There you go, Bobby. Now, you know, a few months ago, it kind of came out. We talked about it a little bit last time you were with me. Now it was rumor before, but now it's kind of out there very publicly that an organization that you were very close to, Easy Riders, is up for sale. You got any word on us about what's going on with the magazine? What's up with all that? Where do you think that's headed?
Well, it's interesting, and maybe I'm hoping by Sturgis we'll have some announcements. The current owner of the company, he's hiding in a bar in Florida someplace near a swamp. This group of thugs is headed down there, and on July 22nd, they're going to surround him, and we'll find out what's going to happen next. But
there you go.
He tried to auction it off, and he had a deadline for May the 15th, and nobody met his reserve. And so it's taken a while for him to realize that maybe he needs to just sit down and talk to some people who are really interested in making the brand fly once more.
Yeah, you know, it is such a great brand, and it's got such a wonderful recognition in the industry. But, you know, print magazines are really tough to keep going. It's an expensive product. It's hard to get advertisers in there. But, you know, if it seems odd. I don't know why when you weren't with them so many years ago that they didn't, you know, really jump on the Internet bandwagon. It seems like you were a little short-sighted there.
Well,
but
you know, twice I left that company, and twice I left it at its high point, you know. And
there you go. And twice you left.
Then it would stumble and have problems. So, but, you know, you just, businesses are like, I don't know, they're fascinating. You know, you look at so many businesses over the last 20, 30 years and what they've been through and how they survive, and it's an interesting thing to follow, to watch and see the structure. And I'm sure you've encountered that and like that,
yeah,
your brother's dealership there and how the boss didn't realize that it's really not safe to ride helicopters. And,
exactly.
And what happens? He thought motorcycles were dangerous, you know?
Yeah, no shit. That's the second Harley dealer I've heard. Earl Small died in a helicopter crash out of Atlanta, too. So I used to want to ride in a helicopter. I'm good now. I'll stay on the motorcycles. Now, Keith, I got another I got another etiquette question. This one is, this is a good one though. It says, Scott says, I patronize an independent motorcycle shop. He says, should I tip the mechanic?
Hell yes.
Yeah, you should tip the mechanic. I mean, absolutely.
I'm a big believer in if somebody does a good job for you, you got to do something a little extra for them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if it means you take them a six-pack of beer or you buy them lunch once in a while or whatever it is, to show them that respect is amazing. Because, as you know, nowadays, the amount of scams and the amount of bullshit that's out and the lousy work ethic, if you run across somebody who's good and they take good care of you and they show respect for your property and your motorcycle, man, you want to take care of them.
Yeah. Well, that's the shit. It doesn't have to, Scott, it doesn't have to be like Bandit said. It doesn't have to be monetary tipping. But, you know, if he's going to be the guy working on your motorcycle, then you should get to know him and know what he likes. Or, if there's a restaurant in town that you know that he and his wife would like to go to, you get him a gift card for that or whatever. But, you know, yeah, take care of that guy because those guys, they've really got your life in their hands. If you're not working on your own bike, then yeah, you need to be doing whatever you need to take care of that guy. And if you're in an independent shop, more than likely you're already getting a pretty good deal. Cause I know all those guys are cutting it we're all trying to make money out there. So, yeah, absolutely. Take care of the guy. Yeah. I agree with you, Bandit. We got to take care of that guy.
Yeah. So, if you go to an event, buy the guy a T-shirt and take it back to him, you know?
Oh, yeah, because those guys never get to leave.
Means a lot to them. Yeah.
Absolutely, sure does. Now you're also on top of, you're involved in everything, the motorcycle industry. Without you and Bob K, the motorcycle industry would cease to exist and never would have been. But you're also a part of what I understand is you're a 2%er with the Hamster Club. Would you agree to that statement if you're a 2% hamster?
Yeah, I guess so.
pretty hardcore. I mean, I was just with Jody Perowitz, who's a hamster, her dad, you know, that old criminal, Dave. We were just together out in Austin, man. That chick's hardcore. She came on stage, and she was doing, she was snorting metal flake, man. She was doing lines of flake like it was going out of business. House of Colors must be giving her that shit. But a pretty tough crowd, but. No, you guys are 2%ers, you know, the guys that have, in our motorcycle community that have five or more bikes in their garage. Hamsters are an old group, got a great history with them. What do hamsters do? And I know that a lot of people always ask me, who are those guys in the yellow shirts? What do they do? If you had to describe hamsters, what do they do?
Well, hamsters are, one of the things is guys used to always say, oh, hamsters are millionaires. Well, no, that's not the case, but originally hamsters were made up mostly of guys in the industry, builders, painters, you know, guys who made parts and things like that. Well, then it expanded from there, and it became some of their customers became members, some of their employees became members, you know, it just their family members became members. But the one thing that I used to always – would bother me is that people would say, oh, you know, hamsters don't ride. They're just rich guys. Well, the hamsters ride a lot, and they build some beautiful bikes, and they ride them.
To become a hamster, that's the deal.
They have a major ride always from someplace in the country to Sturgis every year. And I'll never forget going to Mammoth, California, and meeting up with them. And they had just ridden over from the Bay Area, and they were spending the night in Mammoth. And a couple of other guys came in, and they said, oh, yeah, we've already been to Sturgis. We went to Sturgis, and now we rode back to meet the group.
to become a hamster.
They're three times. Am I still a hamster? Was that the question?
Absolutely. Yeah, are you still a hamster?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to meet up with the group this year.
There you go. So, and to become a hamster, actually, one of the criteria is, first of all, it's like any club. You have to be invited to ride with them. But the other thing is you have to ride, am I mistaken, a custom motorcycle to Sturgis or make some, you know, you have to be able to demonstrate that you you have a custom motorcycle and that you ride at distance, correct?
Well, yes. You must have a custom motorcycle. I mean, they went through this whole thing about baggers for a long time because we used to be invited to ride, you know, like at the Love Ride. They used to, like, put us up at the front and stuff like that because we were all on custom motorcycles. And then as the years went by, more and more guys were riding baggers. And
right.
I said, no, this can't be a bunch of guys on baggers there. We've got to make sure that everybody has a custom motorcycle. So that's
right.
That's part of the deal.
You
know,
have
I
a
wanted
custom
to add one point about independent shops and working on your motorcycles. And
yeah.
Tipping the guy. Well, one of the things that I believe, sort of code of the West, is that every guy who has a motorcycle needs to have a manual for that bike and needs to know about his motorcycle. Because one of the key things to me is that if you take your bike to a shop, when you get it home, you should go over it. And you should make sure that, you know, the guy didn't get interrupted with a phone call just before he turned his bike over and forgot to tighten something down, that you can check it out. And that's not no disparaging remark regarding mechanics, because mechanics, you know, they're under a lot of pressure. They've got to get the job done. But to me, every guy who owns a motorcycle needs to know his motorcycle enough that if he takes it in for a tune-up, he can get it home, he can check a few things out, make sure everything's tight and everything's right.
Absolutely. You know, every time if I do something drastic, like if I do a ground-up build or if I have a guy's bike and it's completely disassembled and we send the frame off to paint or powder coat and we put it back together, new wheels and everything, because I'm a one-man shop, one of the things, now I've got my older son, Andrew, working with me, but he's not a motorcycle mechanic per se. He's still kind of finding his way around motorcycles. He's a great diesel mechanic, but one of the things that I've always done is I take that bike to an independent shop, to another mechanic friend, and have them look over it because you don't know what's been missed, you know, and because you do miss things. And it's just you know, you need somebody to be able to second check, and that owner should second check. A great example of that is I sold Jeff Nager, our good friend, a Dyna, and I delivered it to him, and he rode it and everything. I didn't have somebody else go over that bike. I had somebody else ride it down in Florida, but I didn't have anybody go over that bike, and he got the bike, and he said, well, this was, you know, this hadn't been done, and this hadn't been done, this hadn't been done. And it was absolutely because I hadn't, you know, had a redundant system in place to take care of those kinds of things that I just missed. And so, mechanics can miss things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's interesting you brought that up because Jeff has been telling me about that Dyna for the last 5 years and how the wheels fell off it and the front fell off it. And
yeah,
you know, you're right. You really should have somebody check your work.
Yeah. I sold him a piece of shit, but you know what? That guy's he's never going to fucking say anything, and he lives out of state. What the fuck do I care?
Oh, man. No, you know, what you brought up was really a good idea, and, yeah, that's sort of the opposite of what I was saying, but absolutely, you really always have to have, and my grandson is working with me now, and I'm rebuilding his Dynaglide that he wrecked, and he's learning those things too, and he's riding, you know, some of the custom motorcycles in my shop, and, you know, I'm trying to instill in him that, you know, you're riding a motorcycle, and God damn it, motorcycles are dangerous, you know, so you got to check it out. You got to make sure that, you know, everything's tight, everything's running, you know, doing what it's supposed to be doing, and it never hurts to check it twice, and,
And mechanics, we can't have so much ego that we don't ask, hey, man, would you mind coming over and check and make sure that, you know, see if I missed anything, you know, and, you know, that's just, That's just part of being good and safe. So absolutely, I think that's good. Every owner should at least be able to have a manual and read up on what their mechanic just did and be able to go back and look and try to understand what's going on, at least so when something else goes wrong, you know, they can talk a little bit about it with the mechanic. Otherwise, you're going to spend a whole lot more money in diagnosis because you can't really even explain what happened, you know. So excellent point, Keith.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, man, it's always good to talk to you. I can't wait to get back out on the on that alternate coast out there and visit with you, man. I miss seeing your face. Are you going to be in Sturgis?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll see you in Sturgis. Now, where are you hanging out in Sturgis? Are you allowed to stay? Will your parole officer let you?
I'm going to be staying in Deadwood. I'm actually going to take my grandson to Sturgis, and I'm building a panhead. Now, you're going to love this. This has got panheads on it. It's got a 69 right case and a 79 left case and a 5-speed transmission. And so it's going to be a panhead, and it's going to be a kidney-shaped engine, but it's still going to have an alternator on it and, you know, like an Evo electric start. And I'm doing what Go from Brad Stiles doing. I'm going to build this bike, so when you see it, you're going to think, wow, he just found that in a barn, and it's 50 years old.
Wow. I can't wait to see that. That sounds like a cool project, man. Hell yeah. I'm totally down with that. That's going to be sweet. So, well, I'm going to be out at the Buffalo Chip. I'm going to be camping out there, my Airstream, and trying to hawk some of my shop shirts and doing a little work for a couple of companies out there, just kind of doing some spokes work. So we'll have to grab dinner. I've got good friend Jeff Klum and his wife Cindy are in up there in Deadwood, so I'm going to have to come up there and see them. They live up there, so maybe we'll have to go up to Clint Eastwood's restaurant. Or no, that's not Clint Eastwood. What's that guy's name? The other good-looking one.
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner. Maybe we'll go. Maybe I'll buy you dinner there. That'll be good. Or we'll take Jeff Nager and make him buy us dinner. That'll be good.
Absolutely. I want to see your Royal Enfield because I've talked to the guy from Royal Enfield. I've been kind of following him all these years, and I've been harassing him to build a twin for a long time because I thought, damn, you've got to keep people in your market. You got to give them something to go up to, you know, and so it would be a natural. But they also mentioned that real soon they're going to have counterbalanced engines, and you know, it's an exciting brand, and I hope they do well.
Well, they're buying Ducati, correct? You broke that news, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're buying Ducati from Volkswagen Group, so that's exciting. So, man, I tell you, that's cool. I'll have the bike out there in Sturgis, man, and you're welcome to look at it. I wouldn't ride it because I'm a shitty mechanic. You can ask Jeff that, but you can at least look at it. If you decide, you will let Jeff ride it first. If he comes back alive, then you can take it for a ride. But man, it's always good talking to you, brother, and I want to have you back here in a month or so. I want to ask you some questions about five-ball racing leather and all that stuff and all the rest of the shit you're into, man. Thanks so much, Keith. Really appreciate it.
All right. Good to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for Sin Central Pod E. I still swear I'm the cleverest guy on the Internet for coming up with that. The second half of our show today was brought to you by Atomic Dice Studio Art. That's Atomic Bob's company, Atomic Dice Studio Art. He is trained in fine art all the way down to the art of crap. No, actually, you can send him anything. You can send him a frying pan, and he'll pinstripe it, or he'll paint your daughter's face on it in the style of Monet. He doesn't care. He slings ink, ladies and gentlemen, and he's one of the most talented men in the world at doing that. So go check out Atomic Dice Studio Art for all of your needs. His specialty are kind of old Ed Roth-style monsters and aliens. He does a great job of that kind of 60s art, but he can do anything for you. So if you've got a car, a bike, a dishwasher, whatever you need, artistically enhanced, Atomic Bob at Atomic Dice Studio Art can take care of that. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Pat Jansen with Sin Central Garage. And remember, children love me, women want me, men envy me. Go out there. Don't be stupid.